So in the course of the day, we have come to quite a few agreements on how we can move forward with our dialogue on a full range of issues that the two nations are interested in.
Secretary of State Powell speaking today from Beijing. Mr. Powell is at the end of a Far East itinerary that included stops in Vietnam and South Korea. He will return to Beijing in October in the company of President Bush. Dan Shore joined us. Dan, good to be back at the old pop stand with you.
Yes, Scott. Good to be talking to you.
Let's begin with a good chunk talking about China policy, because President Jiang Zemin has reportedly said that Secretary Powell's visit is so short it shouldn't even count. But I wonder, is that the point? Is the administration trying to say something about the tenuousness of relations with Beijing?
Oh, I think so. I think that on his trip, that Secretary Powell was very busy making preparations for that meeting you talked about between two presidents in Shanghai in October. Mm-hmm. And what he's apparently tried to communicate on this indeed very short trip, an all-day one, is that the Bush administration needs to, and that it will, keep pressure on Beijing on matters like weapons exports to countries like Pakistan, North Korea, on matters like human rights, on persecution of religious minorities, but at the same time doesn't want to be considered as being hostile to China, especially when it comes to trade. Mm-hmm. I think that the phrase strategic competitor is now being dropped from the American lexicon, and so I imagine that Powell comes away with agreement to talk about arms proliferation and resume talks about human rights, and life goes on.
So far, we've seen three Chinese-born academics convicted of spying for Taiwan and then released, and two just this week. I'm reading the account in today's Washington Post. One of the detained academics said that the prosecutor said to her, you know, if we want to convict you, we will.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of this, what I'll call catch-and-release policy, without trying to minimize it?
It reminds me what the policy used to be in the old days back in the Soviet Union, when you found the security people and the hardliners pushing one way and the people looking for something else and something softer looking the other way. So you have here this aging Chinese leadership worried about keeping control of a younger and a globalizing generation of Chinese people, and here's a policy that is not monolithic. The hardline security people will toss Americans and American residents into jail. The softer line people then release them very ceremoniously at a time when China will, say, gets the Olympic Games or when a high American official comes calling, and life goes on.
Mm-hmm. But to prove you're soft, you first have to be harsh.
Yes, approve, you know, or you have to have hard people doing hard things, which you can then soften up.
Yeah. Let's move over to Russia, because in Italy last week, President Bush and Russian President Putin opened the door to talks limiting offensive and defensive weapons. The National Security Advisor, Dr. Rice, has been in Moscow this week trying to flesh out details of those discussions. Does the speed of these talks tell us that Moscow and Washington seem to be in some accord on that 1972 anti-ballistic missile treaty?
Well, not necessarily, or at least not as much as appears on the surface. I mean, I must say this relationship is also acquiring a certain ritual character, and I'm not sure it may last. Here you have President Bush, who looks into Putin's soul, he says, and finds him honest and straightforward. Then you have Putin, who says that Bush's reasoning is very deep, very profound. These guys seem to be more impressed with each other than each of their own populations seem to be impressed with them.
You know, Dick Cheney might need to be replaced on the ticket next time. Seems to me the two of them are making cow eyes at each other.
Or Putin might need a vice president.
Do you think, inferring from public statements, that Dr. Rice is as confident about the possibility of bringing about an agreement as the president?
Well, I think she's putting the best face on it that she can. In Genoa, they reached this interesting but rather vague agreement to link talks on offense and defense that got big headlines. And then the question was, major movement, Russia now ready to abolish the ABM treaty and now permit American missile defense? Not at all. Condi Rice spends these few days setting up the meeting schedule. As soon as she leaves, the Kremlin takes the occasion to say that Putin's opposition to changing the ABM treaty is immutable, is the word they use. The Russians say, on the other hand, that the United States is ready to negotiate agreements on reducing both nuclear stockpiles. Bush says, not at all. If we do it, we're going to do it all by ourselves, not by agreement.
What do you make of this? The United States walked away from negotiations this week, calling for tougher enforcement of the, I guess it was the 1972 Treaty on Biological Warfare.
Mm-hmm.
Add this to the Kyoto Accord and the lack of affection for the 1972 ABM Treaty. Mm-hmm. Is this in any way separating the United States, let me put it that way, from the international community?
Well, obviously, if you have a lot of agreements and you walk away from those agreements, you are separating yourself from those with whom you have those agreements. Mm-hmm. In Genoa, at the big summit, the United States got more flack from our European allies than from that ancient enemy, Russia. What's this all about? There's a list of agreements. You've mentioned already a couple, global warming, ABM. Then there were also small arms traffic, landmines. About the only kind of agreements this administration really seems to like is trade agreements. I think that, you know, Scott, I think somebody's been listening too much to Frank Sinatra singing Doing It My Way.
Mm. Former Indonesian President Wahid was replaced this week. He's in the United States, reportedly right now undergoing medical treatment for high blood pressure. Former Vice President Megawati, the daughter of the, I guess, a man you covered years ago during Indonesia's revolution.
Yes, sir. How do you remember that? You weren't born yet.
I've read about it in your book.
Okay.
Just recently.
I wanted you to mention the book. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, we've taken care of that. Do you think Indonesia is now poised for a turnaround?
Well, here's a trivia quiz question. Mm-hmm. What are the two countries which have presidents whose fathers were presidents, right? The other one, of course, is Megawati Sukarnoputri. Her father, whose revolution indeed I covered way back in 1948, was the founding president of Indonesia. In the middle of the impeachment of Wahid, her predecessor, she went to the movies to see Shrek, and that may be one of the reasons that her people like her so much. Whether, however, she has what it takes to pull together this once rich and now decomposing archipelago, that remains to be seen. To be popular is not the same as being able to govern, and that's what you have to cross your fingers and wait to see.
Let me ask about Congress. Jumpstarting the economy has become an issue of concern. Tax cuts been done, but legislation on a number of other issues seems to be stalled. I'm thinking most notably the Patient Bill of Rights.
Yeah, well, the Bush administration is not having a good time with Congress, not even with House Republicans, whom the president used to count on to defeat bills so he wouldn't have to veto them. Now, the latest is the House yesterday voted to reinstate the tough controls on arsenic in water, which this administration has suspended. He simply is not getting support on matters like Patient's Bill of Rights. Imagine how bad things are when the president, talking about the progress of his program, has to cite something like renaming Peace Corps headquarters for the late Senator Paul Coverdell. Mm-hmm. I wonder if he was only joking when he said the other day a dictatorship would be a lot easier. There's no question about it.
Pope John Paul used his matchless moral authority, whatever people might think of him this week, to ask President Bush to not authorize federal funding of stem cell research. President seems to be delaying what he said would be a deliberate decision. What do you read into what's going on there now?
Well, it's being delayed some more. It was going to be August, and now I'm told it's going to be September. We're not sure it'll be September. For a president having to choose between, say, Nancy Reagan and the Catholic Church, this is a real, genuine dilemma. He expresses it with a peculiar remark like this. I love his remarks. Remark like this: my process has been, frankly, unusually deliberative for my administration. That means that he really has problems. He really stuck. Senator Bill Frist has an idea that you could do this thing, get a kind of a compromise on it. The Catholic Church indicates otherwise. And there is President Bush wooing Catholics for 2004 and stuck between them and the Pope.
Thanks, Dan Shore.